Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Rebecca F., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, February 17th, 2014. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are in Chapter 2, There is a Solution. We will start off by revisiting the last paragraph on page 22, which begins with, We Know That While. Today's readers are as follows. Reading the OA 12 Steps is Jason. Reading the OA 12 Traditions is Kieran U. And reading the text are Judy B., Rick B., Esther C., and Lisa P. The share ID for Sunday, February 16th, is 5923. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Jason to read the OA 12 steps.
Good morning, A Vision for You. This is Jason. I'm a compulsive overeater from Vermont. The 12 Steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Step number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Step 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters to practice these principles in all our affairs. I pass.
Thank you, Jason. I will now ask Karen Yu to read the OA 12 traditions. Karen? Star one to unmute.
Hello?
Hi, is that Karen?
Yes.
Go right ahead. Thank
I was.
You.
Okay. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I pass.
Thank you, Karen. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book in Chapter 2, There is a Solution, on page 22, by rereading the last paragraph beginning with, "We know that while." I will now ask Judy B. to get us started.
Good morning, Rebecca. Thank you for your service. This is Judy B., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Massachusetts. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens, both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. And this is just reviewing what we have been talking about during our last meetings and talking together. We've been talking about the physical allergy, which we as compulsive overeaters endure, and we've talked about how it is different for us as a compulsive overeaters because it requires us to identify clearly those foods which give us this bodily reaction. And that's a very important part of our beginning the program. We have to eliminate these things totally. It says, let me go back. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens, both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. And that is what exactly what happens with us. Once we take certain ingested food into our body, we are just on this cycle of needing it over and over and over again. And that's just part of our problem. And we're going to go on and talk about the other part of our problem, which is the mental obsession. But we have to know first and foremost that there are certain things which we just cannot ingest. And we have to let go of those completely so that we can embrace this program and we can find true recovery and true happiness in this program. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy. Would anyone like to share on this paragraph?
Eileen?
Larry?
Eileen, and then Larry. Go right ahead, Eileen.
Thank you so much. This is Eileen, a compulsive overeater from Bedford, Mass. I could so identify with this paragraph. Let me see, where am I here? Okay. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. I know that, and it's all about acceptance. I was reading the paragraph on acceptance yesterday, and the answer being to all my problems today is acceptance. I find when I'm disturbed, I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact in my life unacceptable to me. And that's what happens, I think, is that you've admitted that you're a food addict or a compulsive overeater, but it's difficult for you to accept it, and you pick it back up, which is what I did for 18 years. I couldn't put it down. And I suffered a lot of consequences because of this disease. I do, when I'm not eating, I'm positive. I'm happy. I'm joyful. And I'm free, like it talks about in the big book. And if I pick it up, it is virtually impossible for me to stop. The obsession just takes me over, and the physical weight starts to climb back on. I had a relapse for a month, and I regained 10 of the 38 pounds that I had lost in a month. That's a little more than 2 pounds a week, you know, and I'm just so grateful that I have this book that gives me a map on how to not pick up my drug. And it's been a little over 4 years now, and I have no cravings today. Today, I have to keep it that simple. So until I could accept my compulsive eating, I could not stay abstinent unless I accept life completely on life's terms. I cannot be happy. Acceptance is the key, folks. Thanks. I'll pass.
Thank you, Eileen. Larry?
Good morning. Larry, recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. Thanks for your service. We're equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens. Something happens, both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. You know, for me, the more emotional and physical pain I felt, the more I ate. And the more I ate, the more physical and emotional pain I felt. It was a never-ending cycle. And I had to understand what they're talking about here with the allergy. And I can never change the allergy. I still have the allergy right now. I happily put the food down. I'm not restless, irritable, and discontent, but I still have the allergy. In my cabinet, I'm looking. My daughter has a cereal item. looking at it right now. So, you know, those one serving types of things. I used to eat boxes of these. Wait, boxes? Yes, boxes. In a day. You know the big boxes of cereal? Yeah. When I'm not, you know, an allergy, an adverse reaction, bad reaction. Thing was is that I never broke out in hives. I never had a rash. I never got itchy. My throat didn't close up. No, none of that. But that is not the definition of an allergy. And sometimes we buy into that as the only definition. If you look it up in the dictionary, and I'd encourage you to do that, all it says is an adverse reaction. And that's what happened to me. And it's not common. Maybe one out of 10 people have this. That when I pick up a binge food, and I know what it is, and it's for me, it's not broccoli or water, and it could be for others, but it's not. When I pick up a binge food, something happens in my body that just requires me to have more and more and more. So the more emotional physical pain I felt, the more I ate, the more emotional physical pain I felt, and so forth. This disease robbed me of every bit of dignity. You know, and when I came into this program, you know, the little gate that was opened in the fence was, you know, I heard people for the first time talking my language. And it was no longer a secret. It was no longer my little secret because I didn't know there was other people that felt like me. You know, I'm not alone. Maybe I can recover too. And like many others, when I came into program, I realized, whoa, I can control my food with sheer willpower. I can read these steps, make calls, pick up tools. And I was dieting with group support. And I wanted to graduate. I can do this on my own. I could graduate from OA. Even though I heard people say, these recovered people, whoever the hell they were, I heard them say, you don't graduate. Oh, contraire, I'll prove you wrong. But the book is very clear, very clear. The purpose of the book is to elicit, to bring about a spiritual awakening. How? By dealing with steps. That's the object of the big book, to find a power. It says it, to find a power greater than yourself. And is there any more power in me than you? No. There's confusion with step two because, you know, the God of my childhood wouldn't have kept me out of pizza for 2 seconds. I have an allergy. I had to find a new God. This isn't about reading the steps. It's about doing them. Read them, I had no recovery. I read them, and I dieted, and I controlled, and I was miserable. And more indignities. So, you know, and then I'm blocked off by God, you know, with fear and, you know, and all those things. So I guess what I would say is we must look for recovery with the same zeal that we looked for the food. You know, can you put down the food without having a spiritual awakening? Yes, you can. I will guarantee you there's someone on the line that has done just that. Of course you can. It's called a diet. And I did it hundreds of times. And sometimes I sustained it for months. For months I did it. Was I disciplined, boy. If I had a good enough reason, a wedding coming up, a this or that, oh, man, I could diet. And if I call some people and get some support, that'd be all the better. But never. I always picked up again. Always, because I have an allergy. And only a spiritual awakening. By reading about the steps, no. By doing them. And if my sponsor isn't taking me through, then I need to find a new one. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Larry. We're going to move on now with Rick B. to the next paragraph. Rick, we don't hear you.
Sorry. You hear me now?
Now we do, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility. but none of them really make sense in light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of the man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so that he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. My name is Rick. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Of course, I'm going to the second sentence in that paragraph. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. That idea is put very plainly in that sentence, but it's not new. It's not new. If we look at the doctor's opinion back on page 29, they talk about a psychic change. Well, psychic has to do with the mind. And the doctor wrote, unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. So they've already told us that we need to have a change in our mind. In the next sentence, he says, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. So the doctor has already told us that the solution is a change in our mind. And again, in this sentence, they're talking about that too. So where are we? We're basically at step two, because we need to be restored to sanity. Well, what is sanity? Sanity is soundness of mind. We need a way to restore ourselves to sanity. Step two says that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So if we put it all together, what are we looking for? We're looking for a change in our mind. And we're looking for a change in our mind from a power outside of ourselves. And as we keep reading, we're going to find out that that power originates from God. We haven't heard too much about that in this chapter. We certainly heard about it in Bill's story. But the rest of the book is going to tell us how we get in touch with that God, how we get in touch with that power, how we take away the blockages that were stopping us from communicating with him, the blockages that weren't allowing that power to flow in. The problem was us. The problem was my mind, my attitude, my way of thinking. The problem wasn't God. God was there all along. But I was unable to tap into that power because I was more interested in taking care of myself. I was playing God. And these steps teach us exactly where we were playing God, what we were doing to be selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid. And they teach us to see those defects of character, and they allow the sunlight of the Spirit to shine in. That's what we're going to learn about in the book. We're going to learn about how to get in touch with God. And I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Rick.
Hi, this is Debbie from Chicago.
Hi, Debbie. Lauren, go ahead.
Okay. My name is Debbie. I'm a real compulsive overeater. This is one of my favorite lines and one that fascinates me. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. And so it seems significant. It doesn't say that as a compulsive overeater, my problem is in my mouth where I put the food in and chew it, or it's not in my moral system, you know, where I do things to hurt myself. It's not because I'm good or bad or weak that this happens. It's in my thinking. I have an abnormal way to think about food. I can falsely believe that it's my higher power, that it will fill the hole in my soul, that it will take away the pain, that it will decrease my self-hatred, eliminate my depression, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that is typical thinking for an addict, this addict, who after years and years and years, and I have some shame about saying before and during OA. I came to OA in September of 1987. And today I celebrate 26 days of abstinence again. And so even in the rooms working the steps with the sponsor, my thinking as recent as 25 days ago could tell me I could engage in some foods and food behaviors that I haven't ever been able to do. I hate this disease. I respect how powerful it is. But I'm really, really glad the solution stays consistent. You know, my disease is like, you're a loser. You know, all these years, that's all the recovery you have. You ought to give up, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like my higher power is saying, I don't care how many times you fall down and get up and come back to me. And so that's what I continue to do. I do have... it's been September 2012 since I've had two of my bottom line foods. And so that's proof to me that my thinking can be healed. I know because of God's grace that those two food groups are like beating myself over the head with a hammer, you know. And so I'm grateful for this book. I'm grateful for this meeting. I've been listening to it for a couple of weeks, and I'm so grateful for all the people who do service. And my prayer is that, you know, this time again, maybe I'll get a year so I'll be able to be of service. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Who else would like to share on this paragraph?
Lauren S.
Was that Lauren S?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Lorna.
Oh, thank you, Lorna, recovered compulsive overeater. Before I share what I take from this paragraph, there's a part in one of the recovered stories called The Housewife Who Drank at Home, and it relates to this paragraph, I think. The woman says, because I found that everything I turned to became a substitute for drink. And when all of life is a substitute for drink, there's no happiness, no peace. I still had to drink. I still needed that drink. Mere cessation from drinking is not enough for an alcoholic, while the need for that drink goes on. That's on page 299 in the fourth edition. Also, oh man, and this paragraph is very, very important. on page 23 of 43, we are going to be dealing with the mental obsession of the mind before the first bite. And we use this section as a tool to look at why is it if for one reason or another I dry out for any length of time. Why can't I stay stopped? Am I mentally powerless over food before I take the first bite? Please, if you do not know what you are, if you're going through this the first time and you think you know what you are, ask yourself that question. Ask yourself, could I always find an excuse to eat? You know, are these observations pointless if I just never took the first bite? And finally, they say the observation would be academic and pointless. It would be academic because it's important information to know. It's important to know about the physical craving, which we talked about on page 22. But it's pointless because that's not going to keep me abstinent. It's not going to keep me abstinent by self-knowledge and by just not picking up. Thank you so much. I will pass.
Thank you, Lauren. Would anyone else like to share on this paragraph?
Barbara?
This is Mom.
Leah?
I heard Barbara.
Hello, this is Rachel. Rebecca?
Okay, yes, hi, Rachel. Just a second. I heard Barbara, Leah, and someone in between. Who was in between?
Kim. Sharon. Kim.
Kim. And Sharon.
Sharon.
Okay, and then I also heard Rachel. And was there someone else?
Sharon in Colorado.
Is that two different Sharons? Okay,
no.
I'll assume it's the one then.
Thank no.
you. Okay, so Barbara, you're up next.
Thank you. This is Barbara, I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I just want to take a look at a little phrase in this paragraph that has a lot of impact for me this morning. And that is the fact that once, you know, I take any alcohol, whatever, into my system. Well, as part of the, you know, psychic change for me, it had to be very clear that what that direction means to me, any alcohol, whatever, means that it was not just in order to physically be ready and willing to go through the mental changes and the spiritual experience. I had to be clear that it wasn't just a list of binge foods for me. It wasn't just food groups. As a person shared, you know, I am literally addicted to the act of overeating. And that was my experience, and that was an experience that I wasn't clear on for years and years, so I repeated the story, and I repeated the battle of thinking, well, I can just have a little more. Well, that is my any alcohol, whatever. That's a downfall for me. So it's very clear that any alcohol, whatever, means for me that any act of overeating anything, because being a person of extremes, you know, and all or nothing, the history of, you know, more is better, it can be very deceptive and very seductive and very alluring to think that, you know, something is safe. It has to be very clear that as I have to watch excess in the food, so any alcohol, whatever, is any excess at all, and I have to, of course, in practicing these principles in all my affairs, apply that principle in the ongoing, you know, recovered life. And that is, I mean, you know, let me buy three music boxes instead of one. Three is always better. Music box seems very innocent, but do I have to get three of them? You know, all in, nothing in moderation, everything in excess. So I'm very grateful to be looking at that this morning, and I pass.
Thank you, Barbara. Kim?
Morning, Rebecca. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took that first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. So what are these observations? The observations is the paragraph before. If we simply had a one-fold illness, if we could identify those foods which cause the physical craving, and that is our only problem, then we would simply abstain from those foods. You know, if food and weight was really my problem, then the hundreds of times that I put down the food, I would have been fine. If weight was my problem, the dozens of times that I lost weight, I would have been fine. My problem is the true nature of compulsive overeating, the ism of my alcoholism, is that I am not comfortable in my own skin, that I am restless, I am irritable, and I am discontent. My true problem isn't when I open up that bag of Doritos. My true problem is when the bag is empty, because I am not comfortable being abstinent. Abstinence is not the answer. Abstinence gives us the clarity of mind to attack the real problem. The real problem. I have other allergies. I'm allergic to penicillin. I had a really bad reaction as an infant. I don't even remember it. But I have the sanity of mind that I was told by my doctors and by my parents, you cannot have penicillin. I don't need to sit in a room of people and talk about how difficult it is not to have penicillin, because that allergic reaction is all I have. So therefore, it is academic. The insanity, the reason I need to come to Overeaters Anonymous is because of the obsession of the mind. Diets, diet clubs do work if you are not a compulsive overeater. Calories in, calories out, moderate exercise is a solution for those people that do not have this twofold illness. And even if you have this one-fold illness, if you have allergies, if you cannot stop eating once you start, and that is your only problem, then identifying those foods and getting abstinent is enough. But my problem is the obsession of the mind. So just to give you an example, let's say that someone, you know, the normal reaction to poison ivy is you break out in a slight rash. Let's say that you have an abnormal reaction. You have this anaphylactic type reaction to poison ivy, but you love to hike. So what do? You understand you have the allergy. You wear the proper clothing. You understand what poison ivy looks like. And when you hike, you know to avoid those areas that have poison ivy. That is sanity. But what if you know you have this allergic reaction, you take all the precautions, but your mind is telling you, ignore the beautiful sunshine, ignore the beautiful woods, look at that poison ivy, look at that poison ivy, look at that poison ivy, oh my God, that poison ivy, oh my God, that poison ivy. And eventually that obsession comes so strong that you strip down to your underwear and you jump into the poison ivy and you roll all over it. So is the problem that you're allergic to the poison ivy? Or is the problem that a mind will not allow you to walk through those woods without getting obsessed and jumping into poison ivy? That is a compulsive overeater. My mind will not allow me to make a sane decision about picking up the food. And therefore, I need something greater than myself that's going to get between me and those obsessive thoughts. So these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim. Leah?
Thanks so much, Rebecca. Good morning, everybody. My name is Leah, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. I am a real compulsive overeater, you know. It's true that when I eat certain foods, I can't control the amount of food I eat. You know, something happens to me when I ingest certain substances. When I put those foods into my body, I develop this insatiable appetite for those binge foods. And once I get started, I have little or no control. And that is a bad problem. It's a bad problem because when you love to eat the way I love to eat and you can't control the amount you eat once you start, that's a bad problem for someone like me. But my book is telling me here that I've got another problem, and it is a lot worse than that. My book says it's my main problem and that it is a mental problem, that the problem centers in my mind, not emotional, mental. Mental. I've got a problem with my mind, because when I say I've had enough, when I say I don't want to cry myself to sleep anymore, when I say that's it, I'm through, it's been years, it's been decades since I've been eating myself to death, that's it, I'm not going to do that anymore, all of a sudden, at some point, I change my mind, and having that first compulsive bite seems like the best idea I've had in a long time. What is wrong with my mind? Why don't we respond to humiliation? This disease brings with it tremendous shame and humiliation. Why don't we learn from the consequences of our behavior? Why couldn't I learn from those tears? Why couldn't I learn from that humiliation? I had stopped thousands and thousands of times. Why couldn't I stay stopped? Why did I forget to remember? I remember other things. I'm fairly bright. I have a decent memory. Why did I continue to repeat behavior expecting different results and not learning from my experiences? Despite the suffering, despite the humiliation, despite the divorce threats, the loss of jobs, the you know, decay of any meaningful relationships. I could not connect the dots when it came to this. You know, my book is going to teach me that I have a defective mind. That is my main problem, that I am inherently flawed and suffering from an obsession. That's where they come in with that whole idea of insanity. I may be sound in other areas of my life and sane in other areas of my life, but when it comes to this, I lack soundness of mind. I have an inability to see the truth. One idea enters my consciousness and it will dominate it in such a way that all other ideas, meaning I know I'm going to suffer, I know I'm going to have consequences, I know it's going to bring tremendous pain, all that is shoved aside and I am possessed by this idea. The obsession becomes my only reality. Inside my skin, I have no effective power with respect to my binge foods. I have no choice. That mental obsession condemns me to compulsively eat, to take that first bite when I don't want to, and the phenomenon of craving condemns me to continue eating once I start. And even when I'm not compulsively overeating, or even when I'm not thinking about compulsively overeating, my life seems unmanageable. I'm restless, I'm irritable, I'm discontent, I'm on edge, I'm impatient. You know, my book is teaching me eventually that lack of power is my dilemma. And there is going to be no mental defense against that first bite that I can apply on my own. That defense has got to originate from a higher power. A sick mind can't heal a sick mind. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah. Sharon? Sharon, we can't hear you.
Thank you, Rebecca. This is Sharon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. This is Sharon H. in Colorado, a recovered compulsive overeater. And I just wanted to zero in, too, on that one. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you any kind of 100 alibis, but sometimes none of them make any sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic drinking bout creates. And I am just so grateful that I began listening to this program in July of 2012, and they were in the doctor's opinion, because that's when I began to understand the truth of the twofold illness, the mental obsession, and then the physical, which is activated by that first bite. And, you know, an obsession, what is an obsession? It's an idea that overpowers all other ideas, a persistent, disturbing preoccupation with an often unreasonable or irrational idea so strong that it can make us believe things that are not true. And then the compulsion, the craving, and irresistible impulse to perform what is often an irrational act. The body takes over, the mind is no longer in control, and we're unable to resist with one's unaided, puny willpower. So that's a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that we have. And the mental is surrounded a lot around the food because we keep lying to ourselves. Well, this time it'll be different. This time I'll stop. This time I can blah, blah, blah. And once that mental obsession is removed by the grace of God, then the mental is activated by our toxic thinking that we never knew how to think properly to begin with. Our feelings, attitudes, resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear, those are the main ones that dominate in our mind. And so that's where God comes in and begins to restore our minds to sanity, which frees us and restrains us then from taking up that first bite that will start the cycle all over again. So I am just so grateful to understand that today and know the problem is the physical allergy and the mental obsession. The solution, a complete psychic change, a vital spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. And how do I do this? It's through this program leading to the solution of the 12 steps that I must practice on a daily basis to maintain that freedom from the bondage of food addiction. And I'm so grateful for this book. And for all of you out on the line and for all of your service, I thank you. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sharon. Raquel, you are next. Raquel?
Hello. Hello,
hi.
Rebecca.
Hi, Raquel.
Is this Rebecca?
Oh, yes.
Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you, Raquel. Your turn.
Thank you so, so much for the service you are giving. My name is Raquel, and I am a compulsive overeater in recovery. And I am so grateful for everything that was just said. I think everything was said so well and so eloquently, but I can't help but go into hear this wonderful piece about, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. How long I have waited for this Vision for You program to be on, for the studying of the Big Book. I really didn't just wait. I didn't get answers in OA. I'm in program for 35 years, since 1979. Maybe somebody can do the math better, in Hartford, Connecticut. And when I wasn't getting answers, after a while, I started going to AA and to NA, and there I had a little bit better understanding of the life or death issue that we are talking about, but I did not have this daily guidance of what we are, thank God, are doing here together now, studying this book, studying, and getting it into myself deeper and deeper in my heart, to concede in my innermost self that I am in this respect like somebody whose legs were cut off and he's not going to grow new ones. And if my legs are cut off, then I better make sure that my wheelchair is near my bed when I want to get off of it, and make sure that I didn't sign up yesterday for a marathon of running. So the memory, you know, becomes so vivid of how again and again, in order to cope with life, I would go into the food, even when the problems had nothing to do with food and nothing to do with eating. And when I had periods of abstinence, 7 months, 9 months, here and there, you know, somebody said I had a week here, a week there, I put together 5 years. No, now is really 5 years, but I remember in the morning the scene of my drunkenness when my son would get up, the last one at home in high school, and he'd, just like the alcoholic has a bottle and a glass, I used to have the cups of coffee, the sweet and low packets scattered around, and the crumbs, and he was already 2 heads taller than me, and he'd grab me by my shoulders and say, Ima, Mom, why are you doing this to yourself? You know what it does to you. I had no answer. I finished what he was going to take for lunch for tomorrow, a bagel, whatever it was. Oh, my God, it was so awful, so awful. And I'm so, so grateful that I finally understand not to tackle with this. And even if obsessive thinking comes about any other subject, to not be alone with it, because my addicted mind is a bad neighborhood to walk around in without parental guidance, to call a friend. And thank goodness there are quite a few of us here already, local call, who are really doing this recovery thing, this wonderful God-given thing that anywhere you touch it, you only are blessed. And thank you so, so much for everybody who is online. And God bless you. Continue. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Raquel.
This is Bella. Can I share?
Sure, Bella. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bella, and I'm a thankful recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, Rebecca, for doing this service, and thank you very much, everybody that is on the line. Yes, me too. I would like to talk about the mind. And I love this paragraph, and I love this sentence, because I can feel safe and secure. Suddenly, I start to understand what's going on in my life. So, yes, what is the mind? the mind is a part in our brain. And I just started to think that what is the brain is like a drawer, like I put, let's say, towels in the drawer. So, and I decided to buy a new towel, and there is no more room in my drawer. So I can get angry and upset. Oh, how come I bought new towels and there is no room for to put a new one? Or I can say, well, it's about time to take my old towels, to take them out from the drawer because it takes place, and now I have place for the new towels. And this is the same thing with my mind. Now it's about time to take out my old thinking that it's not good for me anymore. I am not there, and my old thinking are not useful now. I want to live now, the present. So a few paragraphs before, they gave me the ability, the power to identify myself. Am I a real compulsive overeater? So this is the beginning of my new thinking that I want to put in my new box. Yes, I am a real compulsive overeater. It's not because my mother is telling it to me, not because my husband, not because my teacher. No, I have the tools and the power, and yes, I am. Now, I also know that I am a compulsive overeater, not because I choose it, not because I am not smart, not because I am not doing well in school, because this is a present that I got from God. That's it. It's enough of my thinking of blaming and judging. That's it. I got it as a present from God. This is my new thinking that I put in my mind. Now the doing the steps are teaching me to build up a new thinking. Now I have the basis. Yes, I am a compulsive overeater, and it's not because I am not doing good. It's because I got it from God. Now it's the second step. Yes, God is a higher power, higher than me, greater than me. And it's again, I am human like all of us, and I need a power greater than me. I don't want anymore to be the driver that drives my life because I can't. Now I want to give it over to God. Now I want to change my thinking. Now I want to change it that I can do it by myself. No, I can't. I want to be, this is the way I choose now, one day at a time, to be connected to God. I am giving it over to God to drive my life. I am here to, as a servant, as a messenger of God. And I am happy and I am thankful to God that now I have the ability, the tools to change my way of thinking, to change my mind. And how I can do it? First of all, to put down all my poisoning food for me, to take out my blockage of the mind. And thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Judy. Bella.
Judy?
Yeah.
Hi. Hello, Stephanie Mayer here.
To be honest with you, we're almost finished and I wanted to turn, so I'm going to go next. This is Rebecca F. from Connecticut, a recovered compulsive overeater, and thank you for your patience. We will be on for another hour in an unrecorded portion after this. I just wanted to share on this part about he beats himself on the head with a hammer. And that was me. I was beating myself on the head with a hammer over and over and over again. I didn't realize it, but I can see it now. And I didn't understand how to take care of the problem. I didn't even know that I had no ability to do it on my own, that it required a higher power. I didn't know it was an allergy of the body or an obsession and an obsession of the mind. Luckily, the first 100 people who recovered from alcoholism wrote this book and passed it on to all of us addicts. And I was able to step into a room of compulsive overeaters and hear a speaker share about how she hadn't had her binge food in 23 years. And a light bulb went on, and I realized I'd been beating myself over the head with a hammer. And as strange as it seemed, the idea of giving up that binge food that I loved so much that I literally did not think I could live without, I was able to do it. I was able to put it down once it all made sense to me, this allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. And it wouldn't have lasted, I know that, had I not picked up the spiritual toolkit and worked this program as if my life depended on it. But by the grace of God, I was given the opportunity to do just that. And today, I don't beat myself over the head with a hammer anymore. And with that, I pass. And it's time for us to close. So, Esther, could you please read on page 164?
Good morning. This is Esther C., recovered compulsive overeater in Canada. I'm sorry. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Pass.